We want to complete our work in the Department of Fish and Wildlife, also 5023, and we have TGO for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that's related to licensure, and that is also 2100. We will begin with Council 5019. Mr. Rocco, for the good of the order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council 5019 has returned to the subcommittee once again. As you may recall, on July 6th, the subcommittee approved the DEQ budget originally by eliminating a position in the Environmental Partnership Oregon Communities Program and adding five positions for the Community Solutions Team that were in the package in the budget. These positions were funded with a combination of general fund and federal transportation planning money through the Department of Transportation. Then on Saturday, on July 10th, the subcommittee reversed this action due to the information provided that the Transportation Economic Development Committee was not going to include the transfer of TEA funds in the ODOT budget. After that action and the subcommittee's recommendation of for the subcommittee's action to send the bill to the full waiver means without recommendation, further discussions ensued, and based on those discussions, we have the following recommendation. Basically, it's to return to the original proposal of the subcommittee, which would eliminate the one EPOC position, and then approve the addition of four of the five community solution team positions. That package originally included four principal contributors, one position, and one clerical position. And what we're recommending now is to approve the four principal contributors as members of the Community Solutions Team and eliminate the clerical position. This action would result in a reduction of the original package of $11,172 general funds and $100,449 other funds and one position.
Colleagues, the co-chairs looked at a bill that had moved out with the amendments that were requested. With Tammy heard of the vote and looked at the prospect of two co-carriers at Ways and Means and decided maybe to add or reconsider the action. So the point is that having taken concerted action in this committee and having expressed reservations and even objections to the change made the process respond by restoration. So we're putting about $890,000 back into the DEQ budget because the dollars are 10-to-1 match with $221. So, Senator Corcoran.
Mr. Chair, I wish legislative fiscal would make up its mind. You know, they just keep going back and forth on the darn budget.
Oh, that and sloppy drafting is
in
the vein of the beginning of the.
Need to put blame where the blame belongs.
Actually, we have to have open the work session and have a motion to reconsider the bill. So let's open the work session. We need a motion to reconsider the bill.
He's in a hurry. First of all, I can make a comment. I find it interesting when the subcommittee and leadership makes a decision that fits very well with Senator Corcoran. I am assuming. I know it fits well with Senator Messner. Senator Corcoran still must expound and share his strength, hope, and lack of wisdom.
I will let you know, Representative.
I sure recommend Senator Corcoran.
I'm filling it all on the budget, sir.
I don't believe I referred to the budget. I referred to an action.
Chair recognizes Senator Representative West.
Mr. Chair.
I
recommend we accept back into the committee and reconsider House Bill 5019.
Any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the we amend House Bill 1519 as reflected by the July 12, 1999 Legislative Fiscal Office Memorandum.
The motion is to accept the recommendations of the Legislative Fiscal Officer, Mr. Rocco.
I would like to point out that the changes we're recommending are reflected in the dash 3 amendment that we have before you.
So we could actually just move the dash 3?
Mr. Chair, to and included in my motion, I move the dash 3 amendment into House Bill 1519. That's the amendment dated 7/12/1999.
Representative Westman has moved the dash 3 amendment to House Bill 1519. Any discussion on the motion? Any questions? Any objections? Not the order. We have before us an amended version of House Bill 1519, including the dash 3 amendments. We need to move that to full ways and means. Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 1519 as amended in full committee with a do pass. I'm very proud to say do pass recommendation.
Mr. Russell Wesson has moved the amended version of House Bill 1519 to the full ways and means of the do pass. Mr. Rocker, would you call the roll? Discussion on the motion. Mr. Rocker, would you call the roll?
Representative Wesson.
Aye.
Representative Grimson.
Aye.
Representative Messerly.
Aye.
Representative King.
Aye.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
We are in recess for a moment.
No, I appreciate those no votes because it would allow Senator Ferrioli to get up and get through his, aerobatic aerobic exercise.
Aerobatic?
Well, it's probably aerobatic too, but I'm trying to look people in the hall.
You know, Representative Westland, a lot of people are wondering why we have the biggest audience lately in our natural resources. And it's not because of these issues. It's because everybody wants to watch you and Senator Corcoran spar.
Hey, we tried to mention, you know, we can't do that.
Can you remember that? Once
you guys voted down that rep.
We just wanted you guys here.
I missed you. I didn't want to interrupt. I waited for the vote until I did it.
What do you do? We will resume the call for the question and colleagues, we're voting on moving House Bill 1519 again. And Mr. Rock will continue with the roll, please.
Senator Tarno.
I think it's a lie.
Senator George. Chair Ferriol.
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you. The motion passes, and we already have carriers, do we not?
Yes,
sir. Mr. Carriers, to remind the committee.
Senator Ferriol is to full and to the Senate floor, and Representative Westland in the House.
Okay. Before I go out of work session, I'll just repeat briefly for our colleagues. Senator George and Senator Tarno. We had received word back from the co-chairs that as a result of our protest vote, essentially our courtesy vote, on the Department of Environmental Quality budget, they reconsidered the action of the tourism division here that were sketched and then moved it back to our people. So our concerted action, I think we have a good effect on the process. Yes. Close the work session, close the public hearing, and we'll go to House Bill 2356, work session. And Senator George. Okay, House Bill 2356. Mr. Rocco, would you like to introduce?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2356 specifies that money from the sale of fish seized from persons for violation of commercial fishing laws be deposited into the commercial fisheries fund and be used for the management of commercial fisheries. Last session, the legislature moved all revenues from commercial licenses and ad valorem fees from the general fund to the commercial fisheries fund. And this bill would complete that action. There was one component of money that was failed to be moved last session, and that would be these monies that are received when individuals are in violation of commercial fishing laws. The fiscal impact that you see indicates an estimate of approximately $140,000 that instead of being deposited into the general fund would be deposited into the commercial fisheries fund and be able to be used for activities eligible under that fund.
Thank you, Sharaco. Members, our good colleague, Ruston Thompson, who sponsors this bill. I'm going to open the public hearing and ask him to present the major offer. Oh, it's a work session. I'm going to invite Representative Thompson to present this testimony. We'll open the work session. Representative Thompson, could you help the members understand the measure?
Well, the measure is simply if a person is given a ticket for an overreach, it happens commonly in the salt fishery because of there's no way to weigh the fish in the ocean. That overreach usually has a small amount of fine of value. The fisher sold the value of the product. That product then would be transferred instead of the general fund to the commercial fisheries research fund. A lot of times there is no fine. It's simply a case of there's a slight overreach due to a miscalculation since we have no way to weigh the fish in the ocean. There is a possibility to have a fine if you were to be way over, but that's rare. In fact, the only time of a large deal like that was because of a number of miscalculations created by the federal government. And I think the 140, there's no way to tell what that is. That's a very rough estimate. If we do a really good job, it could be zero. That is strictly a rough estimate. You see, 140 is probably less than that.
Colleagues, any questions for Representative Thompson? Representative Leffler.
Representative Thompson, if there was a fine, would that also then be transferred to the research fund in addition to the sale of the product?
I think I know the answer, but I'd like to ask Lindsay Ball that question.
He can nod or he's the expert on this. I don't want to say it wrong.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm captain of the Fish and Wildlife Division of the Oregon State Police. If there's a citation issued, Representative Westman, for an overage violation, any proceeds from a punitive fine goes back to the state system. It doesn't go back to the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
There's been no fines and assessment?
That's correct.
Okay. I'd just like to thank and compliment Representative Thompson for bringing us this bill. I mean, this is an excellent piece of legislation. I think this gets that at an industry supporting itself. This type of legislation we should be proud of. Thank you, sir.
Colleagues, any questions? Any further questions? And does anybody feel the need to hear from anybody from the Department of Fish and Wildlife over this? If not, we are in work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2356 to the full committee with two pass recommendations.
Questions on the motion? Objections to the motion? Hearing none. So ordered. We need to establish carriers for the House floor, Representative Thompson, Lisa Kempton, the House floor, for the House carriers. Just need a full waiver.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe this is going to. Or came directly from the House Committee on Water and Environment to Ways and Means.
President Thompson, direct chair of the General House. So ordered. And the Representative Mitchell, would you carry it to full Ways and Means? And we need a Senate carrier. Senator Tarnal will carry on the Senate floor. We'll close the first session on House Bill 2356. Thank you, I also note that former Representative Liz Van Loon is with us today. Welcome, ma'am. Glad to have you here. Thank you. We will open the work session on Senate Bill 1028, and Christine Nifflin is the legislative fiscal officer on that. Christine, do we have the amendments to Senate Bill 1020 and available?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have 10 minutes.
Thank you, ma'am. Begin.
Senate Bill 1028 originally was referred to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. It came out with a detailed recommendation with amendments and was referred to Ways and Means. You're being handed out a fiscal impact statement as of yesterday, the staff measure summary, and the ATAM amendment to the AIM Growth Bill. My understanding is that as of this morning, the Department of Agriculture's fiscal impact is being changed, so we may have a new fiscal impact statement while this is going on. Would you like me to discuss what the bill does, or would you like?
Let's have a presentation of the bill, and then we'll ask the Senator Church to make any additions that he would like to do. And then we'll, teacher in work session, we'll need a motion to amend, and we'll have to discuss the nature of these amendments, and then of course we may go into recess on this work session until we get the final fiscal, mm-hmm. and then we'll go on to the other bills that are before us today. So let's do that. Yes, ma'am.
What I'm going to tell you, the bill does, this is based on the changes made by the ATAM amendment. The bill establishes a plan for gathering information about the effects of hazardous substances. It coordinates state agency resources in gathering the information, requires reporting to the state fire marshal by employers, owners, or operators whenever hazardous substances are sold, used, manufactured, generated, stored, possessed, or disposed of. It eliminated the exemption by public applicators, so it refers to both public and private applicators. Posting is required by schools and daycare facilities when hazardous substances are used. DEQ and Agriculture Departments must develop testing programs for all water quality listed streams. Department of Agriculture must develop a pesticide education program for urban areas. Agriculture Department must also investigate reports of aquatic animals with signs of toxic poisoning. DEQ must investigate complaints of contamination and pollution and keep the report for 10 years. Forestry must provide public information about hazardous substances used in forests. And the ATAM amendments also eliminate the OSU study of pesticide use in Oregon and the increase in pesticide registration fees to pay for the study. So if you'll refer to the fiscal impact statement, fiscal impact for the Department of Education is a $70,000 general fund. For the Department of Agriculture, as of this statement, it's $247,172 general fund and $30,000 other funds. And the Department of Environmental Quality is $41,514 general fund. The Department of Agriculture also would have two FTEs, and the Department of Environmental Quality is a 0.25 FTE.
Questions on the recap that Ms. Nichols has offered? Let's have a seat.
Thank you. The fire marshal is directed to make information available on the fire marshal's fiscal. Not listed on what we just described, and my assumption is that there was another fire marshal. My position was identified in 2431 and that can be the same person that addresses the person.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I'm not sure about that. My understanding is that there is a, if there is a fiscal impact for the state fire marshal, it's small and it would be absorbed
That's what they're lettering here. And then AOI bill, we talked about basically those. That's why these amendments remove those pieces of the bill because they're in other bills. They're in 3602. They're in, I just completely dropped it. What was the bill that we passed every day? That's AOI. Fire Marshal, right? No. Clinical Business. Clinical Business, yeah. That's why the ATMs are here. Those provisions are in there. Also, there's supposed to be some settlement amendments from Senator Wilde, and we're trying to locate those right now. And because of a complaint on DC as far as my complaint, but a better recognition that it might be a substantial decrease in their section as far as fiscal, if in fact all they did was accumulate the reports and not require investigation of every reported pollution into DEQ. And so basically, where they came from, and to give you some background on how we ended up with this bill, Senator Wilde and I, even before the session and then during the early days of the session, began to look at all of the areas of environmental concern in the state and tried to then identify things that we thought we might be able to do something about. And one of those, of course, we all remember the Martin Luther King Boulevard contamination site into being a super site. And what had happened there was evidence that there, in fact, had been reports that this was a problem that needed to be investigated. And that's where that portion came from. What Senator Wilde is attempting to do, and my staff right now is trying to locate him and the amendment, is to say what we will do is just record, we require recording and keeping of that information for 10 years on any complaint call that come in. We're not requiring at this point to actually go out and investigate. Do we have a DQ person here that might address?
Actually, we do. Have the director of the
department here.
I'd like to call forward the director of the Department of Environmental Quality. Senator, do you have a question for the director of the Department of Environmental Quality?
I do. I think Senator Wilde is talking to some folks about that. Are you aware of that amendment that he proposed? And I'm just requiring that a record of all phone calls complaining about environmental issues would be recorded and not actually investigated.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Lanny Marsh, the DEQ director. Senator George, I am not aware of that. The response is a much larger item than recording. I just from the surface of it, it doesn't appear to me that there would be a problem for us or any difference from our current practice to record complaints. I don't know how long at the present time we keep them, but I don't imagine that would be a very great burden.
Senator George, in the interest of time and in the interest of keeping this presentation coherent, I'm going to go ahead and continue this work session. And so when the amendments and Senator Wilde are located, and we can sit down with the director and answer those specific questions, we'll revisit this issue. We have Ms. Smith make the presentation. Have your presentation discussion on the bill, go through the A10 amendments, and then accept the motions from the committee members to propose the bill and move it forward. So we can be better than trying to go through and then come back to it. We may not have the same component of members. Any questions before we leave this work session? Representative Mitchell.
Mr. Chair, I notice there's no sunset, there's no oversight of this bill, of this study. I wonder if that's how wide that is.
Could I answer?
Okay, and that would be a question that we would need to deal with.
Mm-hmm. All of the agencies intended to move this direction off the part of the bill that requires Department of Ag to go ahead and do a pesticide education program for urbanites. One of the things you remember when we discussed about the budget, they talked about doing that. The study of the waters of the state, particularly relative to any malformed fish and relative to any water being taken from that source for human consumption, that has been adjusted in the amendments to reflect the agency's the thought that they could do to perform those duties. And so most of the items here are basically, this is like a direction. Yes, that is where we want you to move. So I'm not too sure of this, how much oversight would be necessary. Like, for example, let's say school notice and reporting. The schools right now there is no plan out there. That was one of the most shocking things for me. No matter what the hazardous substance is, There was no plan. This is what you do. Me as an agriculturalist or a timber operator have to notice what certain chemicals that I might use. And this that isn't required even on schools and parks. We heard in committee, what we did is we showed that this would be a really simple thing to do. You can pick up your Gempler's catalog and other catalogs like that and order all of these things. In fact, a little protein sign for 29 cents with a little steak to go with it. So what it is just set a direction for them to develop a plan for notification of the children and the parents and in the parks are in the inclusion after we modified the bill, but this would be a real simple thing they could do. They would put a notice up, for example, on a board in the park, which are always there, that in fact we would be applying this pesticide or this cleaning agent or whatever it was on this certain time, just so people would know, you know, what hazards, if any, might be there.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you. Your question related to sunset date. We'll deal with that again when we resume the work session. We're going to put the work session into continuum and close the work session today with reservation. We either revisit it today or we're going to carry it over till tomorrow. Or we schedule it with our 1 hour. Do you want Senator Corcoran?
Well, Mr. Judge, have a process today. Can I just try to find out what the position of the agencies were? And my understanding that DEQ hasn't even seen the action. So, if our case, it seems like we've got. It's fine not to let the public into these things with the 1 hour notice, but it might be helpful to let the agency in.
Senator Corcoran, the 1 hour notice has been a regular feature of process in this process for many years, including when the other party was in majority. So I think your comment about not letting the public in on the process is misplaced. By continuing the hearing, we'll have an opportunity for the department to look at the amendments and give our colleagues some time to do that as well. And we will probably, in all probability, we'll invite testimony from the agency at the time the bill is reheard and continued work.
Senator Gershon, the A-10 and other amendments are there to address concerns of the threat to us by agencies, and so it's more of an effort on our part to meet their concerns.
We'll invite their direct testimony to you. Thank you, Senator. We'll go to House Bill 5023. We're in a public hearing possible work session. And I understand there is a very popular sign-up list to identity at the back of the room. So well, at the back of the room, so we'll give a minute for the interested parties to get their name on the sign-up sheet. And in that minute, while we're distributing materials on the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget, we'll remind our colleagues that we are under a situation of a one-hour notification. We may be having a budget deliberations for our subcommittee more than once a day between now and the end of the week, so we'll endeavor to keep everybody informed. My understanding is that Senator George and Senator Turner did not get notifications for this morning's meeting, although we did post it. It's going to be the responsibility of the chair to make sure all the members get called so everybody knows that we're going.
Mr. Chair, the notification is not on the third floor of the house site.
Okay.
That's not on the book for you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll look at the process for making sure everybody gets notification. I'm going to ask the Linda, the committee administrator, to make sure all the officers get telephone calls. So, that has not been the procedure in the past, but I think because of the rapidly changing landscape, so, as we come to closure, we'll do that. And just be aware that other committees, Ways and Means and CO, will be doing the same thing. So your attention is going to be demanded in many different ways.
Yes,
Mr. Rockwell, if you're prepared to do the overview, I'd like to do that. And I noticed that we have a couple of members that have expressed interest in this issue. So we'll make sure that Representative Beyer and Representative Simmons both have an opportunity to address the body as soon as you have the presentation. You may come forward to have an issue.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to review with you the materials on House Bill 5023, the budget of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. A day or so ago, the committee went over these recommendations, and Over in the interim between that meeting and today, we've made some adjustments, and I'd like just to highlight those, and then if you would prefer, we can go into a discussion of Hospital 21.
I think, Mr. Rocco, for the purposes that we have today, that they're considering that 5023 and 2100 have to interlock in order to be effective, we will do that. In the meantime, Mr. Rocco, did you want to do a recapitulation of the recommendations, or did you just want to focus in on the changes, or shall we just go ahead and open the public hearing?
Well, Mr. I would prefer just to show you where the changes are to and what we had discussed earlier. And there was one change that was not incorporated on page 1 of the memo that I just provided to you on item C, relating to package 200 and the propagation program. Due to the retention of the steelhead activities at Fall Creek, the FTE reduction that you see in the column next to item C should be a reduction of 3 FTE from the original package and 3 positions from the original package. The original package had 9 positions, and this would leave 6 positions available to the agency. On the
question, Reverend King?
I'm seeing the denied slide report that looks identical to the July 12th memorandum, so it's not as old as the last one.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, the change I just mentioned was it's not identified in the memo at this point. It was something that happened after.
You're holding up the copies in which it is not identified, Representative King. Representative King, he's asking the committee to hand note the change that he just recapped.
One person lost it. So it was mistyped on the 9th as well.
That's correct, Representative King. It's a mistake on the July 12th memo. It should say it's a reduction of 3 positions and 3 FTE, which leaves 6 positions and 5.175 FTE in the hatcheries.
So essentially what we're doing is restoring 3 of the positions that were proposed for reduction.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The reduction that's proposed on the memo is greater than it should be. It should be scaled back. So,
okay.
So it's worse than 5 if you cross it out, but it's 3.
Yes.
And then we're just 4.171 for correct number in that location.
3.0.
3.0.
Thank you, sir.
The dollars are correct.
The dollars are the same. Yeah. Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, Tim.
On page 2, the other changes that were made they're highlighted on the far left column. So item Q reflects the technical adjustment that we discussed that was not included in the July 9th memo. And this would add 5 positions using 5 limited duration positions using federal funds revenue. And the same is with item R. This was discussed, but it was not included in the July 9th memo. Item F, in anticipation of the action the committee took on Hospital 2356, there's a proposed budget note to be included, basically to direct the department to report to the emergency board on revenues going into a commercial fisheries fund and provide a plan, a detailed description of how those revenues are expected to be used. And if there are additional funds that go into that fund on the basis of Hospital 2356, the agency could request the expenditure limitation of that fund. On page 3, the changes are to the Habitat Division. Again, these are 3 technical adjustments that we discussed on the July 9th memo, but were not included. They're all dealing with, one dealing with federal funds limitations, and 2 are other funds limitations for revenues received for hydro contracts and in the natural resource damage assessment program. On page 4, there's a revised budget note dealing with the sale of surplus property. This budget note was included in the July 9th memo, but so there was some this committee discussion about rephrasing the budget note, and the text of that is included in item D. Basically, requiring the agency to report by December 1999 and describing what information should be included in that report.
And that was reflected on Roseanne Michelli's concern about personal property from other members. Roseanne Michelli,
Sure, I don't know that it needs to be in a budget note, but just for the record, I would want the department to know that they should report prior to that to the OPSEC committee before they report to the E-Board.
Mr. Chair, members, then item E is another technical adjustment that was discussed on July 10th meeting, but not included in the memo, and this was just reflect a addition of other funds limitation due to the revenues that are being transferred out of the state police due to other resources provided to the state police. And in number 7, capital improvement, there was an omission in the papers that I provided you earlier. There's a package in the capital improvements program of package number 351, which proposes to continue a limited duration clerical position in the R&E board. And this is funded internally with a shift of other funds from services and supplies to personal services. And that is now reflected in the spreadsheet materials that you have. And Mr. Chair, those are all the changes from the earlier recommendations this morning. Let's play the system.
Representatively, when we come back to the public hearing portion on 5023 tonight, we'll just talk to the director about the affirmation of the reporting schedule that you requested as opposed to the budget. Mr. Rocco, the representatives that we have before us today, I think, are interested in House Bill 2100 relating to fees. Can we go ahead and have a presentation of that now? We'll invite the two representatives to have for the Valley for us effort.
Yes, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2100 is a bill that was proposed to increase various fees, fishing and hunting license fees. This was discussed earlier in general terms by members of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We today have some proposed amendments that I will distribute, and a sheet describes where the proposed increases would occur by license type and the proposed new cost for those fees. And I'll distribute those now, and you could open this for the public testimony.
Thanks, Ken. We will open public hearing on House Bill 2100. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. Before you, I am State Representative Mark Sherman from Northeast Oregon, Bureau of 58. And I appreciate your chance to come in and testify a little bit on House Bill 2100. I will be fairly brief. I've been an outdoorsman for most of my life, and guided hunters in Oregon, New Mexico, and down in Argentina. And the situation in Northeast Oregon currently is that we have one of declining deer and elk herds. In Wallowa County, this isn't just a sporting issue, this is an economic development, an economic issue. As I know many of you members of the committee are very aware of the many devastating economic blows that communities of rural Oregon have had to endure because of the Federal Endangered Species Act. Timber harvest reductions, bug infestations in our forests, grazing reductions, and many piles of red tape when you do want to do anything. And now, even that annual economic boost that the migration of hunters from elsewhere that could at one time be counted on by local businesses is rapidly declining. And there are far fewer hunting tags available. And this is because of predation. Cougars and bears are very difficult to track or count, but they're there in very increasing numbers. And I'm also speaking to a budget note that is before you. And the Wenaha herd is the hardest hit. Its numbers are down, are from at one time nearly 2,000, I believe the count now is down to about between 500 and 1,000 animals in the herd. I do have the exact data in my office, but I did not think that I could dig it out. And this agency colleague has violated the public trust, their own internal manipulation of the tag drawing process. And now to potentially reward that agency by allowing them to raise fees, I think, sends the wrong message. The fees they charge that very same public to go out and pursue an animal that is in great decline because of management, or lack thereof, management of predators in North East Oregon. I'm tired of getting calls saying there was one on the cougar on the tracks in Elton just the other day, or the one that was right behind the house, or the one my wife saw, or the one by the hospital parking lot, or just everywhere. In Northeast Oregon, cougars are a problem. ODSW has the authority to take on some aggressive management, and they so far have declined to do so, if it's not a direct complaint. And quite frankly, colleagues, I am opposed to a fee increase. And I will oppose that with greater vigor if it does not include some kind of a sunset on what that fee increase would entail. If it becomes a fee increase that is going to go on in perpetuity without any further review, I will have to lobby my members on the floor to oppose that. My colleagues on the floor. But if it does include a sunset on that, then I would perhaps reconsider some of that. But that is my message for you today, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
First, gentlemen, thank you very much. I think the members understand your message, so we'll go ahead and have questions. Shall we hear Representative Byers' testimony, and then we'll have questions for the panel. Representative Byers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Roger Byers, State Representative, District 28. I'm here today in opposition to House Bill 2100. This bill came through the Ag and Forestry Committee in the House. I voted no there. My testimony probably won't be quite so brief. I have about 8 or 9 points I'd like to make why I don't think it's appropriate to grant the Department of Fish and Wildlife a fee increase. Number one would be the agency has been unresponsive, both to us as the legislature and to the public. 18 months ago, in the interim Ag and Forestry, Ag and Natural Resources Committee of the House, which I was chairman of, I asked Director Greer at that time how he planned to fill his projected $10 to $12 million shortfall in his budget, because we all knew it was coming because they were losing some federal funds. At that time, he had no plan, and he did not offer any plan, and I had asked him to come back with a plan to show how he was planning on filling that. I never did hear back from him on that. So right there, they're unresponsive to the legislature. The sportsmen are already funding the total Department of Fish and Wildlife budget. Part of that money was spent by the agency, and I asked him at that time about lobbying Congress to get more money for non-sports, non-game funds. They use the sportsman's funds to go out and lobby Congress to get more money to put into non-game programs. That's an inappropriate use of sportsman's money. Sportsmen are very disenchanted with the program, and it comes because of lack of credibility. I can give you 3 specific examples. Number one, and most recent, is the Preference Point scandal. Insider information used by agency employees to gain preference points over general public with the knowledge general public could not easily get. This has generated an enormous amount of dissatisfaction out in the general public. Everyone who did not get a tag recently, and by the way, they had to do 2 mailings because they may have had an error in that. I don't know what that cost the department, but that's another issue of in this whole arena. But in response to the Preference Point scandal, I believe there were 3 employees got vacation. That does not sound like a penalty to me. I would like to compare you if it was a different department. Let's say the Department of Revenue. If some of their employees were using insider information to pay lower taxes or somehow reduce their tax burden, do you think those employees would be rewarded with vacation I would say those employees would probably be fired immediately because they would have not only been cheating the system but also lost the public trust. In this department, employees that have done the very same thing, some of them get a vacation, some of them get absolutely nothing done to them, except that then they are given programs to take care of, such as running or presenting the problem to the task force, which set up to discover that. One of the very people who was doing this is one of the people running the task force. Now, that seems ludicrous to me. Mr. Chair?
Senator Corcoran?
Are you sure that they were granted vacation, Representative?
Mr. Chair,
or would you be a little more accurate?
Senator Farioli, two employees were given 1 week off, one employee, that's my knowledge, was given 2 weeks off. Yes, without pay.
And you, Mr. Chair, further question?
Question of Senator Corcoran.
I would understand the meaning of vacation to mean paid vacation. Do you think they got a paid vacation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, I never said paid vacation.
He's Senator Farioli.
I never said it.
All right, thanks.
That's all right. We're both short, and one of us is ugly. So.
Yeah.
You
shouldn't be accusing yourself.
Every time I show you, I went to
one number is debatable.
In point of fact, Senator Corcoran, both employees that were disciplined by suspension without pay.
Mr. Chair, level of discipline is an issue, and I actually concur that maybe the discipline should have been more severe. But in the interest of honesty, I mean, the fact of the matter is you hold employees in the Department of Revenue or you hold employees in law enforcement to a different standard in labor law than you do employees in Fish and Wildlife. I just want to point that out. I would hold these employees in Fish and Wildlife to a higher standard as well. I think they should have been nailed for what they did. But to enter into this, I mean, we're going to listen to your 9 arguments against fee increases. I just want you to be really accurate.
Okay. Senator Corcoran, I also agree that the reprimands were not sufficient to reflect the level of public disgust, and I think that's the point that Senator Zimbardo makes here. Mm-hmm. Zimbardo, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple more places where I can point out where they've lost credibility in the public eye. Two, in fact, they don't listen. When they make a proposal, they go out and they supposedly hold and they what they call a public hearing. What in fact is, it's a hearing to say what they're going to do and then go away. And that's fine if they come out to the public and say that, but they hold these scam hearings, say we're here to listen, and they go do what they want to do anyway. Well, two specific examples. One would be Bull Elf and the West Side strategy planning. I believe it was an 18-month process where they bring a proposal forward. The public would say the exact opposite thing, that that's not what they want. They go back and they bring the same proposal forward, and it just went back and forth like this for months and months and months. The public is not being heard. The department ended up doing what they wanted to do in the first place. Another one would be the Willamette Basin Steelhead proposal, which I attended those meetings also. The testimony was 100% negative, and yet the department was not willing to even deviate from their plan to try something new or even to pretend they were listening to the public. It's very much disenchanted. It makes the public very disenchanted with the system.
A third area would be the Milltown Hill project, where the biologists and the people inside the department, they made the recommendation to grant the project, yet the commission overturned that for their own biologists' proposal.
Sure.
Sorry, perfect.
Again, I mean, it's one thing to beat up on the agency for their fee structure. It's another thing to beat up the agency for a decision made by the commission against the agency's recommendation. I watched that Milton thing closely. I mean, I'm not quite sure where you're going. You're going to punish the commission by not allowing adequate resources for the agency? Is that the point here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, my point is that these are examples where this agency and agents and the people out there don't recognize the difference between an agency and a commission. It's the entire Fish and Wildlife Department.
But you do.
But this is just another example of how, and I point out how the people have lost trust with the agency. And that's another reason why.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'd like to take one more shot at that. You certainly understand the difference between the agency and the commission, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So in this case, you're using this as an example of punishing the agency for something the commission did, right?
Senator Corcoran, I think the point that I received from the testimony is that it affects the credibility of the whole budgetary process and public.
Does, Well, they said that it affected the credibility of the agency. Agency's got enough problems with their own credibility. We shouldn't be heaping the commission's credibility on top of it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think the point's well made. I was pretty upset by the commission's activity.
I was too.
It seemed like it overturns the will of the legislature as well.
I agree.
Nonetheless, I think Arizona Buyer makes the point about credibility, and I'm not sure people get the distinctions, but Arizona Buyer, let's continue with your assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another thing I found quite interesting about the proposal now with the -5 amendment would be that, well, first of all, in the Ag and Forestry Committee, it definitely was that Oregon already has either slightly higher or above average tag and license fees in our neighboring states. So that was brought out. Okay. I offered amendments in that committee to two amendments to this bill. One was to lower the prices of fishing licenses, because my theory was there are less opportunities now to fish than there were in the past, so you should not be charging more to fish, you should be charging less. When I came up with that proposal, Director Greer came forward and said that we could not do that. We cannot lower the price of fishing licenses, because that would, in fact, bring a total overall decrease to the department's funding, because he did not believe that more people would buy fishing licenses if the price was lower. Yet the proposal now is to lower the fishing license price. At the same time, Mr. Rollrader said that a 10% increase in fees, which the proposal was, would generate a 2% reduction in sales overall, but it would still mean more money to the agency. He said that the department's own economic analysis could not handle a fishing license fee lowering. And yes, that's the proposal in this amendment is to do, is to lower the fishing license fee. So I find it very interesting where a few months ago in one committee, the department is saying they cannot handle lowering the fishing licenses. Now they seem to be supporting lowering the fishing licenses. I don't understand what the difference is now between that proposal and the other proposal. Dealing with the sport pack license, I offered an amendment in that at that time also that would do the same thing that's being done now for sport pack license. At that time, Mr. Rollrader said that the fees would be reduced too much if they went to this level, and that the department could not absorb those decreases. Well, I don't understand, once again, the difference. If it was okay now, but it wasn't 2 or 3 months ago, to me, it's just another example of how this agency is being disingenuous to the legislature or legislators. Another thing I find interesting about this whole plan now, especially, is the fact that hunting license fees and tag fees are being raised, yet fishing license fees and tag fees are being either kept the same or lowered. Yet everyone knows that the problem in this budget is not with the hunting license. The hunting license side is not generating less money. It's the fishing part that's generating less money. Where is the connection to charging more for a deer or an elk tag and spending more on fish on program? There's a disconnect there. It doesn't equal. If they're spending more money on elk or deer, then they can justify a tag increase. But the proposal is not to spend more money in the big game management. It's to cover the fish side of it. That's not what they're supposed to do. Another issue I have about this is that nowhere in here is there a commercial license fee increase for commercial fishermen. The sportsmen are always asked to carry the load, yet commercial fishermen are out there catching fish, and they're not asked to pay more money. Where is the proposal to have a higher fee for fishing, for a commercial fishing license? Another thing I find interesting about this is I believe, and I'm not a ways and means expert, but I believe what it's done is the money for state police enforcement part is taken out of this proposal now, the fee increase for that part of the agency. Everyone, I think, in this body would agree that we need more enforcement out there to protect our big game and our fish. Yet the proposal to increase for the police, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not exactly, you know, said I don't understand the budget completely, but I believe that's been taken out of this. We are also asking currently we have a pioneer license, and those people, once they've been 65 years of old and been in the state for 50 years, they get a hunting license, and then I believe it's a free elk tag.
this proposal says they're going to have to pay half of the price of an elk day, which will be about $18, I believe. So we're raising the fee on older residents of Oregon who have their entire life supported the Department of Fish and Wildlife, supported the state. Yet at the same time, we've got senior citizen licenses who are 70 years old or older and live in the state for 5 years. I had a proposal that would move that to 15 years. That died in the Senate, by the way. It didn't pass the House. But so you're taking people who have been in the state for 5 years and giving them reduced fees and licenses, yet you're tacking extra on to people who have been here for 50 years. It doesn't seem to make much sense. It's just going to disenfranchise the older people. You're also asked to do the same for disabled veterans' health pay, rather than the free or the $2.50 tag, go to an $18 tag. Whereas, you know, we're honoring our disabled veterans, people who have supported our country and then been injured in the process, and now we're going to tell them that they no longer deserve a lower price elk tag. They got to pay $18.50. That's about a 600% increase for those people. The department has had many screw-ups. I'm sure all of you are just this year in the legislative session. I couldn't believe when on the same day that this bill was up for hearing in front of the Ag and Forestry Committee, I received a card in the mail, and I've got it right here. It says, I was successful for the spring bear tag. I found that really interesting and really exciting, especially when I hadn't even applied.
That must have been the legislative bonus set.
I got one that said disregard previous maintenance, and then it came out and said, you know, mistake, hit the wrong button and nailed all these postcards out, all these sportsmen. Now all these sportsmen, once again, I mean, that's just a classic example of a department, I'm going to call it Department of Screw-Up. We also got one.
Sure. Richard, yes, on the
oh, yeah, it's probably be broken.
Okay. Yeah, we'll come back.
Well, I just want to say, for the record, I got a tag for Kirkland, and I didn't get this was now my mistake.
Okay. I have to admit, it wasn't the agency that sent that out. It was me. I was trying to get them to send the fire out of the building. I thought maybe we'd get out of here by July, but as it turned out, it didn't fall for it. Here we are. What is today? The 11th or
12th?
No, it's just great. Spring is over, so. Okay,
I thought we were going to have the school budget out by spring break. See, I had everything kind of timed that way, Mr. Chair.
Mine said sooner the better.
Another one.
There are enough credible questions from the panel.
I did a couple more. And it's in the department's screw up. Another one that, in a response to what to do in case a cougar attacks you, it was in a meeting that held on the South Coast someplace, it was, the department's answer was to, and I don't have the exact quote, and I'm sure someone else will probably remember exactly, but some of the fact, just cover your neck and try to act big. You know, and this is what the department is out telling the public what to do in response to a cougar attack. Another one was when it was pointed out that the bull to cow ratio in Northeast Oregon is not what it wanted to be, but it came out that, well, the quickest way to change that and increase bull ratios is to kill cows. That's the way to do it. Well, we've got an elk herd authority, as Representative Simmons said, is in, you know, decline and hurting, and that's the way we're going to increase bull to cow ratio, is to kill more elk when we already don't have enough. So, Mr. Chair, this is my list of reasons why I'm totally opposed to a fee increase. I have one more, and I'd like to know what happened when the point of sale program, which I'm going to compliment the department on, the current point of sale system they have now works wonderfully. The old one they had through GTEC Corporation was really created problems. The new one works great. I'd like to compliment the department on that. They've done a great job in designing that. But at the time when it was done, they said that once this was up and running, other states would like to come in and use our system because it was going to work so well. And I'd like, and at that time it was projected to have a $1 to $2 million income to the state. And I have not heard of that since. I'd like to know what happened to that proposal. Why are the other states now not using our system as was sold to us last session they developed the system? So, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I understand it's not necessary.
Good question, Mr. Chair. First, Director Simmons. Is the cougar problem in Eastern Oregon worse than what we have on the Southern Oregon South Coast?
Mr. Chair, naturally, I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that. But what I can tell you is that I get innumerable calls, and I get a lot of complaints. And when you read the paper, several times a month, there's one that's either been in somebody's backyard or got somebody's pet, and it's just a matter of time until it's going to be a child or even that adult. I know that the two areas of the state with significant problems are the northeast corner and the southeast corner.
Well, one more question. I'd like to ask our Sunday Buyer if you have any comments regarding the surplus properties.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Meserly, I do have, in fact, your book here that lists the properties owned by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And in my discussions with you, it seems that they have an enormous amount of property that's not being used. And I suggest that rather than have a fee increase at this point in time, the department should be directed to go out and put that excess property up for sale and use that money to backfill their budgets. And maybe 2 years from now, they will have got their ship around and righted it and can convince the legislators and the general public at that time that maybe they do, in fact, need a fee increase and it's warranted.
Before we proceed, I'd like to call up Representative Thompson. And actually, I overlooked Representative Thompson. He's sitting in the back row there, and I would have been channeling with the other legislators when I noticed him earlier. Representative Thompson, do you have testimony you'd like to offer?
Well, I'd like to offer a little bit of,
not correction, but explanation of some of the comments he made, particularly to the commercial fishing industry. One of the things that I changed several years ago in the commercial
Representative Thompson
from House District 4.
You recognize it, sir, but there's tens of thousands of listeners on the Internet this morning.
Thank you. Hi, Mom.
That's not me. But I changed the law from a poundage fee to an ad valorem fee so that as the declining stocks went down, then you were assessed to a dollar value to the fish. And that is a major portion of what we're assessed in the commercial fishing. Our license fee is relatively insignificant. You can't compare apples to apples with the sports license fee and the commercial license fee because the main generator is through the ad valorem tax, and that varies on each industry. I believe it's at 1.2% for ground fish and up to 5% for 5 cents a dollar, 5%. On salmon, and each aspect has a different fee. But that generates the main form of income so that we didn't have to come back and keep looking at increases all the time as we did in the past. It used to be we'd be in almost every session getting reassessed. And it's worked very well now for several sessions, and I see it working into the future. And our license fees are pretty comparable with the other states. But that's at the discretion of the group. That was one of the things I wanted to say in our own defense. Why commercial? You don't see the commercial fishing license fee increase there. I do agree with a lot of the logic that Representative Byers has stated here.
And that's scary.
Yes, it is. But we are in a situation where there is a hole in the budget, and you have to make a decision whether or not you want to keep offering services, especially at a time when the Oregon plan requires them to do much more. And that's one of the reasons I've contested all along the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife should be drawing more money from the general fund and less from the fishing industry as a whole on all aspects, because the job that you're doing is no longer directly related to fishing, but yet we're expected to supply the money for all the habitat and all the expertise to improve the habitat. But here we are today, no more general fund, and you have to do what you have to do. And that's why when you look at where I marked, I said moderate. I'm not sure how I'm going to stand on the floor, because if they go out and cut out the packages for commercial fishermen, I'm going to have to be opposed to it. But if, and there's a couple packages you have, but if those packages are there and we're seeing a reasonable amount of the money, I could stand up and support it. That's where I'm at. I understand exactly where the sports fishermen are. I understand their frustration. We're frustrated likewise, too, because if we don't receive any money back after being a positive cash flow,
came to the department for years, and the money shifted towards the sports industry for up until a few years ago. It was an excess coming from the commercial fishing that was spent on sports and salmon and trout and things like that. So that's where I am.
Questions for the panel? By Rusty Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here is the Senator Thompson. Do you have feelings regarding the interrelationship or the coordination between the Sea Grant and the research and the ODFW?
I think that the research that the ODFW do is separate from Sea Grant. We tried to interlock it, but they do a different type of research entirely, and I think that ODFW needs its own separate funding source for that research, because without it, Sea Grant's research is not credible to the federal government and the council unless it's run through a particular science, where Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife a lot of times is asked to do specific jobs by the Pacific Marine Fisheries Council, and they have to have that flexible funds in order to do the work they need to do for them.
Is there a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Is there adequate coordination of the data?
It depends on which group of data you're talking about. A lot of the data today is coordinated through Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. There has been mistakes. Each group of data is handled a little bit differently, and it has to be specific as to which data you're talking about.
In general.
In general, it's a little bit hard to say because it depends on the task that's put before them. I'm not trying to evade your question, but that's what it is. It's handled differently. And there are certain specific questions that are asked them that only they can do. And then to coordinate between the states depends on the project, such as surgeon.
Well, Representative Thompson talked about the interrelationship between the ODFW budget in general and the fee increase, and concerned here that we're looking at the elimination of package 204, which is $528,000 for FT and dockside fishery services for commercial fishing activities. Can you talk about what the impact of that loss is?
Well, right now it would be a tremendous impact because we're in a situation in history where we're about to go into individual fishermen's quotas, IFQs, and if once IFQs, I'd say they're probably 3 years away. Once they come into existence, that will set the percentage of fish between the states from now until forever. If there's ever a time to have good research at the dock and in the ocean, it's now for the state of Oregon. I think it'd be tremendous money spent. Now, have I answered your question adequately, or should I go into the depth of exactly what they do?
As far as you want. I mean,
there's several things they do. They do dock walks to get accurate counts as to age class, which gives us larger quotas. The larger quota we have, the better off we are in this state, particularly on rock fish, because we have the majority of the rock fish that are landed in some ports. It only makes a difference port by port, too. But, we're real short right now on flatfish research, and Oregon has a wider continental shelf. We have a larger percentage of fish, but yet I see the percentage shifting to other states because of the regulations. The only way we can counteract that is through a package like this and let ODFW generate the numbers and take it to county.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make some comments, especially to Representative Simmons, and thank him for bringing the issue of the cougar once more before a body in this legislature, having and sharing some of the same area with Representative Simmons in my district. They're aware of what the problem is. And I think every person in the legislature needs to take note of what Representative Simmons said. And it is not a matter of if, it is a matter of when we have a human fatality out there with cougar. And, you know, I shudder, colleagues, at being in this body when that happens, because I know what my constituents are going to say to me if that happens, especially in my district.
And I think if we talk about a department that has some public credibility at present time out there, and when that event happens, their credibility is going to go further in the tank. I believe that there must be some awareness of this on their part, because it's my understanding, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that they have established a response team sort of thing. Now, I don't know, you know, in the response team, what it can mean other than public relations response team, because the response to killing the offending cat certainly doesn't require some type of a effort on their part to have a response team to it. So I just thank Mark for bringing that to us again and keeping that in front of the legislative body.
Thank you. If I could add, I appreciate that very much, Mr. Jensen. The difference I'm aware of between the Northeast and Southwest is that in the Northeast we do have documented reductions in rear mail numbers. In the Southwest, and I don't know how you can offer other justification other than human safety for reducing predator numbers.
Can I make a small comment, Mr. Chair?
Please,
I represent the Central Oregon coast, and I know that I'm getting far more sightings of cougars in my area also in the last few years. Unfortunate in the difference in the Northeast or the Southwest, that I have a lot of small raccoons and foxes and things like that, so consequently they stay away outside of an occasional pest in a farmer's home.
Okay.
But there's not any question in my mind that the population is increasing. I'm not sure that we have the dramatic potential for human interaction because of the dense undergrowth and the amount of small animals, but they're definitely increasing, I think, in our area.
The district that I represent, which is the southern part of Douglas County and the northern part of Josephine County, is one of the districts where cougar sightings are becoming much more routine than people are comfortable with. And Representative Atkinson represents the district to the south of mine, which is the Applegate River drainage in the southern part of Josephine County. Large amount of cougar sightings, too. In the watery environment, we heard Representative Simmons of Cougarville, and there was a large number of people that took time out to come from eastern Oregon and southern Oregon to talk about the problems that were becoming very routine in the rural parts of the state regarding the interaction between people and cougars. And I know that I routinely get calls from people in my district that are losing their livestock, losing sheep, losing llamas, losing goats, those kinds of things to cougars. And so you not only have a situation now where there is a huge issue of public safety, and people are, as a matter of course, not allowing their children to go out and play in the woods or ride horses in the woods anymore, but you also have an incredible economic impact to the local farmers and ranchers that are trying to make a living by raising sheep or raising goats and those kinds of things. And there's, besides the fear that people have for their children at this point, there is also a question of the economic impact. Who's going to bear the economic impact of this protection that we've unleashed on the rural areas of the state? It's extremely frustrating to me, sitting through those hearings with the department and getting no answer back from them except the additional need to study the problem. And that we are beyond that point in the rural areas of the state, and that's one of the things that was very frustrating to me. It is not going to be possible for me to support a package that involves a fee increase for hunting and fishing license tags when I look at the other things that are going on in this department and the general unresponsiveness of the department to those kinds of problems.
Gentlemen, I have a question, too. The question I have is, do you find that there's a disconnect between the management in Portland and field staff that scatters throughout the state?
What do you hear about that?
Go ahead.
There are some very, very very good field staff for this agency. The field bios, I think, are the best people. And I think there is a serious disconnect between what those people see and would like to be able to implement and what the Portland office is willing to let them go do.
Well, actually, in the Marine Division, we have a connection between the director and Neil Conan at Department of Fish and Wildlife. They, in the main office, that is better than most field staff. Anytime you have those people that are remote and sitting in hatcheries or in remote areas and they have a contact with the public, they have their own preconceived ideas. Every once in a while, one of those guys will go off and make a statement that makes me shudder, and I'm sure it makes the director shudder, and it's not the intention. I think it's more a nature of having people that are isolated, and the only way you can improve that is through more direct communications.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to agree with Representative Simmons. The field biologists, you know, they're doing a great job out there, but I think there's a huge disconnect between that and the direction and what they get out of their central offices. And I think it comes from the commission. I understand Senator Corcoran's going to jump only against the combining the two, but we have to. I mean, that is what regulates
garbage.
I don't know, what can I say?
You can't jump very high, don't worry.
but, you know, the public does not make it, the distinction between the commission and the agency. It's all the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think that's the problem.
Hey, Parker, do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I have a couple comments. One is to Representative Simmons and Byers, I guess I'd ask the question, if we're told by Fish and Wildlife on the one hand that what we lose without the fee increases is the field biologists, then how do you justify punishing the field biologists by not supporting fee increases?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, again, if I was sitting in those chairs and making those decisions, I wouldn't lose the field biologists. I'd get rid of the rest of it.
I see. Okay, thanks very much. The other comment I have is we're not supposed to attack the credibility of witnesses, but when I started serving in 1995 on a natural resource committee with a certain representative in this room, he said that the only thing he knew about land was that it was used to tie his boat up to. Now he's become a cougar expert. I'm wondering if there's a new species called sea cougar or something. At least they live on land,
Senator Kirk, and I want to note for the record the ecumenical nature of your viciousness today that you attacked.
Thank you,
Mr. Republican, but Democrat.
Thank you. I'm nothing if I'm not consistent, Mr. Chair.
I'm just dead quiet.
I guess that Senator Kirkland's irrational ramblings do bring up a question that those need to be asking. It has to do with the way the director and the department presents alternatives. I choose that through some of the meetings, and we were given a choice that was either we get a fee increase or you need a field biologist, which do you want to do? But there were no other alternatives that were offered. It was simply either we get a fee increase or you lose your field biologist. And I thought that wasn't really an unfair question to ask, unfairly framed. It wasn't an open-ended question. It was picked for at least the two bad options. So that was what you were referring to, Western Buyer. I think I experienced the same thing in the two meetings that I attended in Eastern Oregon.
Can I make a brief comment? I've worked with a lot of field biologists ever since a very young man. In fact, one of the guys who interested me in biology and natural resources right away to eight, and he just died last year and was a tremendous asset to the state. His name was Dale Snow, and changed my life virtually because he was a field biologist. He took the time to go out and do more than just his job, teach kids about what was going on in the ocean. Those types of people are throughout their staff. But likewise, there are many people in their staff that do end up get overzealous. I think that's just the nature of people. I'm worried happens to the Department of Fish and Wildlife a lot of times is we pick out the ones that are overzealous and maybe go overboard and overlook the fact that there are many people out there that do really a great job and do a lot of things for our natural resources. And I'm worried that we're beating up on a lot for a few.
Sure. Okay.
A couple of comments. First of all, in the herring process, and Mr. Thompson, I assume you made a comment to that earlier, I was appalled at the hearing, but I attended that there was no tape, no record kept the hearing. And like the said, she they were pulled right on beyond that. As far as I know, at least the hearing died and they were not taking there. I'm sorry. That's it, and I discussed it with the staff afterwards. Why aren't you taping these hearings? Why don't you maintain a record for these hearings? But to the issue of the break between the head office and the area office, we've been working on this thing since I've been a legislator, and the committees I served on. And it's very clear to me that there's a tremendous lack of policy. I think that plays out in the meeting we just went through, or this is about this right now. It plays out in a lot of the problems we have with the empires we have out in the communities. I also think we've got great staff. They're doing a lot of good work, but they lack guidance. They lack policy as to how to deal with different situations. And they lack confidence that if they do get into a sticky situation, they should go to the next level up and go to the head office or the delegation level. I don't know how, it's not our job to resolve that, but it's getting very into that. But I've seen it for almost half years now, went on 3 years, and I think we just, that has to be a very solid focus. I'm being assured that that is the focus. What we're lacking, from what I've heard our committees were lacking, is a time frame in which they'll start peeling these things off and dealing with them. We've heard a lot of discussion of here's what needs to be done, and we hear you. We're going to start working on that. But we have not seen the time frame that we think in which we've passed to start being built.
Question from Russian. Jeff, did you have?
Mr. Chair, I have another comment if I could.
Comments, Chair?
Thank you. I'm not a ways and means guy. I haven't been, and I'm not going to pretend to be, but I have a perception that if you gentlemen wanted to, that you could leave the hole in their budget and not allow them to reduce any field staff. Now, having said that, I hope that if you do proceed with any kind of a fee increase, that it will, at the very minimum, be sunsetted. This agency needs to be motivated to be accountable. And if we have to come back and justify the fee increase again 2 years from now, I will, can only hope that in the meantime they would have some motivation to be accountable, both to the public and to the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for indulging my
Thank you for being here.
Assuming I'm the de facto temporary deputy dog chair here, we'll call Janice Green to the committee. Witness name. Enter and sign in, please.
Is it your intention to call the ODF&W folks up to at some point in this discussion?
I'll defer that question to the
For the record, I'm Jan Green, representing Oregon for Fish and Fishing, representing
Jan, could you speak up a little bit?
No, don't move the mic. Just
okay. Speak up. The mic for the record, it's not to amplify your voice for the audience. I mean, they need to hear you, we need to hear you, and the record needs to pick you up.
Representing various aspects of fishing opportunity, however improbably, throughout the session. And I'd just like to comment that the budgetary problem on the fishery side that ODFW has is caused in large part by a restricted fishing opportunity from our ESA problem. And I would just like to commend the notion to the legislature and the department that if we don't energetically pursue alternative fishing opportunities, we'll be back in the same position in 2 years without the R&E alternative, which will allow us to practically solve the problem on the fishing side this time. But they need to pursue fishing opportunities for the future energetically, willingly, paying attention to or they're going to continue to have problems. I want to thank the committee for their attention to and sympathy for fishermen's problems in the context of this larger environmental problem that we have with salmon and whatnot throughout the session.
Ms. Green, I noticed in the audience on many of our committee hearings that we sincerely appreciate your participation and being here, making sacrifices, participate in the process. So,
thank you.
And we appreciate your perspective. I believe Senator Corcoran may have a question.
I actually agree totally with what you just said. It's been very good to have been here the whole time. What's your position on fee increases?
On the fishing side, I think it's a practical solution given the reality. But I think it's, you know, let's face it, what's happening is we're moving a large fund from the direct control of fishermen to the direct control of Fish and Wildlife Commission, and I have some help about that. But I think it's a practical solution, and I'm cool.
I assume you support Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Good luck, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Mr. Harder, and you want to?
Rod Harder?
Yeah. And then on deck, Al Elson and Don Watson. And Mr. Petrick?
No.
Said I'd like to call you forward also in the last panel, if that's okay with you. Mr.
Chair, members of the committee, I'll be brief. A lobbyist without a voice is not in much demand. But for those members who do not know my involvement with this agency,
for the record, sir, we don't know who you are.
For the record, I'm Rod Harder, Executive Director of the Oregon Forestry and Defense Fund, the coalition of approximately 40 outdoor groups across the state of Oregon, and we don't do fish. So I will be limiting my testimony basically to the wildlife side. Over the last several years, I have been on the strategic planning committee. I have gone through that entire process with the agency, served on the Sale of Wildlife Parks Committee, served on the Service Review Committee, the Budget Committee to help develop this original budget, and I have recently been appointed to the Control of Hunt Task Force that's examining the latest scandal at Fish and Wildlife. I came into this session in general support of this budget. We worked through this and came up with what we thought was a reasonable approach. It seems that every day, or at least once a week, the agency has done something to undermine that support that I came in here with. We've had two criminal investigations involving agency personnel over the last year, or a little more. And so we are going to oppose the fee increase as it is set forth, and basically on a philosophical ground, not necessarily on a ground that they don't need money, because they do. We do appreciate the sport track license being left alone, and would support the $5 increase for a vendor fee, and that goes, I think, was explained to this body the other day. We adamantly object to the increase in the Pioneer and Disabled Veteran Elk Tag increase. It's a 600% increase from $2.50 to $14.75. Representative Breyer very well articulated the fact that pioneers, in order to get a pioneer license, you have to be 65 and live in Oregon for 50 years. Those people have paid their dues. disabled veterans, I think he articulated that also. If we're going to fiddle with that license fee, then maybe we ought to make everything half price. Lower all the tags to half price fee and make it consistent. We object to the lack of reduction. Actually, what we object to is the statement that if you don't get a fee increase, your biologists are going to take the first hit. Well, I have been here 18 years, senators and representatives, and I have seen this tactic time and time and time again. It's always field biologists and state police. Every time we need to do it, to take a hit, that's where we take it. And we take it there because those are the people that have the most support from the customer. And it's all over again. I don't see any significant cuts in administration. We could very well cut some administrative positions. I have some ideas about that. Hunting license sales have remained relatively stable.
The impact, as has been stated, is being caused by a lack of fishing license sales, and I think hunters are being asked to take a hit that they shouldn't have to take. We have some real problems with the way they're expending their money, and all of you have heard all of this before, but the one thing that stuck in my craw was the fact that they hired a lobbyist within the last year or so to lobby for an excise tax on a federal excise tax. That's not appropriate expenditure of taxpayers' money. Fee increases, we're being told we haven't had a fee increase in a long time, but we have just recently in the last session renewed a $2 surcharge for access and habitat. We have a dollar fee for every tag that's issued. That's added to the cost of the license. Somebody buys 10 tags, that's 10 additional dollars. We're being asked for another 50 cents to go to the vendors. They probably need it, but that's increasing the license fee also. That's part of the license and tag fee. Without question, hunting and fishing opportunities are a bargain. There's no question. What we're basing our opposition on is the fact that the money isn't being wisely spent and wisely used now, and that the agency is not being responsible to the customer. Commitment by the agency to make necessary changes could have been demonstrated during this legislative session, but it didn't happen. There has, rather than reluctant support by my members, there has been a groundswell of opposition, and it's based on resentment over some of the things the agency has done and has not done. You might want to consider signing this increase of performance. We have Senate Bill 778, that has recently passed and should be signed by the governor, requires the agency to report quarterly. There could very well be, and not easily perhaps, a method of basing this on performance. And if this were a performance-based budget, they'd go home with their pockets empty. And we all know that. But to tie this possibly to the 778 bill and the money released in parceled out as they perform might be something you would want to look at. Finally, when you pass the fee increase, when you pass this, you're going to send some messages. And you're going to send a message to the agency that they win again by threatening to cut field biologists and state police positions. You're going to send a message it's okay to spend taxpayer money to lobby for federal excise tax. It's okay to club salmon and sell them for cat food and dog food instead of figuring out how to... And I said I didn't do fish, but I couldn't pass that one out. Instead of figuring out a way to make those fish available to the customers, it's okay for an inner circle of high-level managers to treat the cheat the controlled hunt system and still hold on their jobs. It's okay for cougars to stalk our children in the schoolyard because of lack of aggressive enforcement or aggressive actions by the agency. It's okay for the agency to continue business as usual. I don't want to send that message. As I said before, it's not that they don't need the money. I don't want to reward incompetence. The hunters and fishers of Oregon, you're going to send a message. And the message you're going to send them is that you're willing to increase the cost of their recreational opportunities to reward an agency for their substandard performance, continued deaf ear to customer concerns, and disgusting breach of the public trust. Thank you for the opportunity to attend.
Questions to Senator Brooklyn?
Rob, you said that, I presume you're talking about the hunting side, that hunting licenses are a bargain. You use the term bargain. Why are they a bargain?
I think if you look at the cost of a hunting license and compare it to the cost of the ticket to a rock concert, you know, what I would get out of a rock.
A big rock concert?
Not really. I believe it's a bargain.
Sure, another question.
Another question, Senator Clark.
So, you know, in looking at the nuts and bolts of 2100, basically the revised R&E proposal is increases the wildlife base by 2.5 million. You made the comment that historically what they do is they threaten the field biologists to take these positions, and there's plenty of places you could cut. Can you find 2.5 million and administrative cuts to take care of it?
Mr. Senator Corker, no, I could not find that, but I could tear off with two positions, 300,000 in this by any. And I am not suggesting that you kill the entire package, but there are certainly some things that you could do with this package to make it more palatable and to send the message to the customers that something is being done and the agency is being made to perform.
And guys, we also we have two witnesses yet to testify, and we'd like to take action on the bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you mentioned it's been a long time since a fee increase. Could you refresh my memory of how long it's been?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's been about 6 or 8 years.
And then, one from my conscious, who do you prefer? Mark Nosler or Jimmy Page?
Mr. Chair, I have a
well, he is a guitarist. I think he's got a five chord. I think he can play five chords now.
Let's call forward the final panel. That would be Al. I'm sorry, I can't read your writing. It's just Al. Okay. And Ben Watson and
good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Al Elkin. I'm representing the Oregon Hunters Association. Since the beginning of the session, we have supported House Bill 2100. We continue to do so. We do support the fee increases. We support the fee increase to the level that it would help fund the ODFW field biologists and field support staff and OSP game enforcement officers. I would like to conclude my testimony by saying, quoting Captain Lindsey Ball of the Oregon State Police. He said in a testimony earlier this session that the Fish and Wildlife Division is doing a good job protecting Oregon's fisheries resources. However, we have experienced a 32% increase of illegal killing of our black-tailed deer from 1997 to 98. We all have also observed a 33% increase of illegal killing of our Rocky Mountain elk. It is time that Fish and Wildlife Enforcement is provided the means to protect Oregon's wildlife resources. We support that statement. We support the fee increase and support House Bill 2100. Thank you.
Thanks. Questions for Mr. Watson? Mr. Watson?
Thank you, Sheriff Arioli, members of the committee. My name is Donald Watson. I am the business manager for the Association of Northwest Seal Hunters. We recognize that fish recovery in Oregon is going to be a very costly business. We support full funding for the ODFW budget, and in January and February, our board approved support for what is now House Bill 2100 for the fee increase. We did so, however, with the expectation that there would be additional general fund money assisting in the overall fish recovery efforts. Even if this fee increase is included, as I understand it, ODFW will have to reach into R&E funds to provide additional administrative costs. Those R&E funds are also dollars that come directly out of the angler license fee, and we, being an angling organization, are the ones that do pay those fees. In addition, our organization last year put in over 20,000 hours of volunteer effort supporting R&E type projects on the ground, so we're very concerned that this is an opportunity that can be valued quite highly in terms of economic return to the members. We're also concerned about the potential for federal intervention in the Oregon plan if they deem Oregon to not be putting forward a strong effort on fish recovery. And without going into it, I have a letter that was written several weeks ago that I'll pass out to the committee for their perusal. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Watson? Sit?
Yep. For the record, I'm Louis Pipp, Jr., Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Warm Springs Confederated Tribe. We're in support of the Bill 2100. I was just thinking about Senator Corker here being offending the Democrats and Republicans. I just received, asked for a note of a Senate bill, and I got the number of Senate bill from one of your lady helpers here, but it's on a Viagra form here, goodness.
I am a fan.
Look like I need that.
From my staff?
No.
Senator Perioli's office on the second floor. Mine's on the third floor.
Doesn't improve your memory either, apparently. We are clearly back on the record here. It's easy for the 1-3 tribes, I think, the folks that don't pay state taxes directly. We do pay our share of services to the state and surrounding communities in many, many ways, is that for us to say we're in support of the bill. And so definitely with the spirit of, I think, the full package is that we're always concerned on the east side that we get ignored and such. And so we're in support of the bill 2100, and I heard from Lindsey Ball that there was a question about 5 police officers, and with the increased, I think, density of folks just all through our areas on the east side, we're real concerned that not only for fish and game, but for cultural resources. We came to the legislation in 1993 and 95 to get some of the only kind of resource protection and cultural resources in the nation, and private properties, as well as increased penalties in 95, that the police officers that are trained would really go a long way to, trained in cultural resource protection would go a long way to help that matter. So, again, clearly for the record, we support a modest increase of hunting and fishing fees, and I think that's all really needs to be said. I'm going to put this in my memoirs here of memorable things in Salem.
Any questions for Mr. Pitt?
I will point out to Mr. Pitt that they did have that issue come up early in the session about the fish that were too close to spawn. And this Viagra solution may help in some of the management areas.
As usual, we are overwhelmed by your brilliant Senator.
How would you know?
Well, we obviously haven't seen any of this session.
Who would identify?
Okay, I see that any other questions for Mr. Pitt? I see that all the witnesses have testified, so unless there's two little comments.
I want to see.
Liz, you can make two comments. We're on a real-time crunch here. We're about ready to get a call, so 1 minute.
Okay. First of all, for the record, I'm Liz Van Leeuwen, private citizen. Okay, how about that? First of all, when I looked at the budget then and heard complaints from around the area that used to be my district, I asked to see a copy of the fishing rules. And I kind of think maybe you'd sell more tickets, more licenses, if the rules weren't such a quagmire. And I think some other committee suggested that to the agency, but I don't think it's going to happen unless you put it on as a budget note. And then the major question, and I hope you've all heard about the killing of the approximately 6,000 pool holes at the False Creek Hatchery on the LC drainage. The department, somebody, knew that they were going to destroy those huge salmon, coho, many of them. Why at an earlier stage did they not sell fishing tags, licenses, and let either or both commercial and sports fishermen catch those instead of making them into cat food and bait eggs? Thank you.
Thank you, we're going to close the public hearing. We're going to open the work session. House Bill 2100, but I'd like to call the director forward and Mr. Rowlater, if he's available. Before we go into work session, I assume we're going to have a couple of conceptual amendments. I hope the staff is on balance for this. But I think the testimony that we've heard today is really compelling testimony. We are, you know, proverbially between the rock and the hard place. I share the concerns of people who feel that if we send this budget out, then, or at least the fee bill out, then, at lower than the recommended levels, that we do start to eat in the credibility of the Oregon plan. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is the agency primarily responsible for managing fisheries and wildlife in Oregon. That puts a certain necessity before some of the principles that you heard expressed today. The issues that have been raised about the fee increases and the choices that were offered by the department to the public, the relative unresponsiveness of the agency, the clear perception, at least in the legislature, that there's a management disconnect between the field offices and the office in Portland, the crisis that the agency, I think, is in today is real. And I don't believe that our action today, largely, which will be based on a courtesy vote in this committee by many of the members, speaks well of the agency. I think your agency is an agency that's clearly in management failure, and this crisis needs to be addressed in this biennium. I don't think you're going to get a second chance. I think you'll see some no votes today on the budget that reflect more than just a philosophical antipathy to fee increases. You're going to see people rejecting your agency as the one that's responsible to carry forward management. So I hope that what the agency takes away from this hearing is an understanding that you have failed to connect with the constituency that supports your agency and fail to connect with legislators, and you both use your considerable skills to do management, not management. And if management isn't the objective, isn't evidenced very quickly by the agency, I would say that your prognosis for a future support from the legislative body and even in the remaining part of the session for the fee increase, results may be mixed at best. And I'm hoping that we can move forward with this because so much is at stake. But unless there's some significant turnaround within this agency, I think we're going to see very little support within the legislative branch for the programs and especially the management directions within the agency. And we'll go into work session, and I'll invite comments from the members before we consider motions. We are in work session. Senator Turner.
Chair, I'm going to give this to a courtesy vote to the board, and I will be soul-searching in the process afterward. I do want to give some credit to the director. I think he's fairly new in his job. I think he's worked pretty hard to find your question of problems, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I agree that maybe the next year and a half he can show us that he will make some changes in the future.
Other comments? That's your sense.
I'm only voting yes for this fee increase and not as a courtesy vote. I came into this session hearing earlier that I was going to vote against the increase for a clear reason that we're paying more for a less product today. And when we hear management, I do acknowledge that this is a new director. I also agree that I think that the response on the issue regarding insider knowledge on the licenses was not as much as could have been done. Diamond Lake is part of these considerations in terms of where the budget goes. And we've got to save that lake. We do have to bring that back. And it's been hard to get to a point where we even had a chance to save that lake. And now we do have a chance to bring that back into the Oregon Recreation picture. With respect to the issue of paying more money for less opportunity, I think this goes back to, as we also dealt with the BEQ budget, where when we went to being 30% responsibility for education versus 20 or 30% from the legislature,
and we didn't increase, you know, taxes to do that, that the K-12 budget is, you know, is consuming parts of the other agencies. And so it's real fair to say that the sports person is paying more, and they're getting less, and they are subsidizing a recovery issue, and that's really a public policy issue. It's not a revenue addition to solve that. At the same time, you know, we're not paying the bills, you know, on a number of things, and we're making some best efforts to be able to provide revenue to do what we need to do. So I also do want to commend the agency in terms of the work that they put together on the first year of the revised proposal. I think there's a lot of creativity on that. I'm sure that's that creativity is what we've done. So, if you're sharing a moment with me there, that will solidify my frustration about this thing.
Senator Parker?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have several questions based on Representative Byers' 9 or so points. Can you respond, please, to the issue that the agency was unresponsive to Representative Byer and not presenting a plan regarding the loss of federal funds, and explain why Representative Byer didn't hear back from you, please?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, for the record, my name is Jim Greer, Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think there was a question relative to us hiring a lobbyist at the legalization of federal funds, and that we were trying to lobby for some federal funds that we see in a congressional act that could bring as many as $7 to $12 million to this agency. Those dollars that we used for one of the lobbyists to do that work was done out of our non-game and watchful wildlife program. There was no dollars that were used from the hunter or the fisherman to lobby that effort, and I believe because of that effort, we stand to realize, although we will have to match those dollars, a substantial amount of federal funds that will help us get through some of these very critical biological issues.
Senator Corcoran, I think your question really didn't relate to who paid for the lobbyists. It did relate more to why Representative Byer never got a response to his request for information. I think that's the question I'd like to hear answered as well.
That's right. That's actually, you answered another question I have for you later. Thanks for mind reading, but my real question was Representative Byer basically, in criticizing the agency for overall unresponsiveness, criticized specifically the fact that he asked you how you were going to deal with the federal fund shortfall, and you never got back to him.
Mr. Chair and Senator Corcoran, I guess I didn't get the specifics of which federal funds he was discussing with us. We have responded to all of those requests, and I believe we've responded to almost every request of legislators this particular session in writing on those issues. So I would be more than happy to get back to Mr. Byer, Representative Byer, on that. I believe we did send a response to that. I think I need more specifics on what his concern is at this time. There could have been an additional issue that's been raised since that earlier response.
Thank you. For the record, whenever I've requested information from the agency about it. Yes, lobbying Congress with Sportsman's Fund. So, again, that was the criticism was unfair because it did not involve the use of the game funds. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Corcoran. In fact, I know specifically a letter that I signed back to Representative Byer and others questioning us on that issue. And we've made it very clear that that's where those dollars came from.
Okay, and I take it you didn't, can I continue, Mr. Chair? I take it you did not grant paid leave vacation as punishment for these three gentlemen that were punished for their action and their preference points scandal.
That's correct, Senator Corcoran. You outlined it very clearly as to what our punishment was for those people.
Okay.
Senator Corcoran, if I might interrupt just a second. Director Greer, do you think in light of the public response to your disciplinary action that it's been sufficient to send a message that there could be ethical violations in your agency with the kind of response that was needed to the those that engaged in that violation?
Mr. Chair, I've handed down my decision on disciplinary action to my employees based on what we saw, and that is my Director of Human Resources, as well as consultation with Pat Hearn from the Government Standards and Practices Board. We looked at all of our policies. We looked at all of the rules
We looked at all the statutes that would have affected these employees, and I made my decision based on violations that were clearly demonstrated through the investigation and the limitations placed on me as a director that have human resource policy parameters that keep me from going beyond the disciplinary action that I handed down. I believe that is some of the most severe. We have never taken action against our employees to remove hunting privileges or opportunities in the past. These are substantial financial implications to the three employees that were put on leave without pay. I believe the other 11, and I think we have to remember that some employees were found to not be in violation, and there was no criminal investigation that determined any other findings that said these people should be disciplined any further. I think you all need to know what these employees are going through, however, and their families, by the beating they're taking in the media. And I can't think of, frankly, any other message that could be sent to the remaining employees that I'm very serious about any ethical violations or any other violations within policy of our agency, and I'll take extreme action if that's what it takes to get that message across in the future.
Sure, were any field staff involved?
Yes, there were.
Senator Corbin, you have the floor.
With regard to bull elk strategy in eastern Oregon, did the agency recommend that you kill cows in order to increase your bull ratio?
I'm not sure, Senator Corcoran. We have a number of different strategies in terms of how we're trying to address the elk populations in northeast Oregon. Many of those strategies do include antlerless harvest. Many of those are also a combination of the damage problems that we have. We're trying to address landowner problems. We're trying to also address bull ratio problems throughout the state. When you do bring the population down overall and you put a certain protective standard on those bull populations, you can raise them over time by an overall reduction in the total herd where there is competition. So it's depending on the unit that we're looking at. Yes, we do employ that strategy.
Okay. These were in light of these criticisms were in light of your Willamette Basin Steelhead study, your bull elk strategy sessions, that you conduct these public hearings, but you basically have a predetermined position and you ignore the public. Is that the way you guys do business, or is that just a perception?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, what we have presented in many of these meetings are proposals and options that our staff has come up with. Oftentimes, we are asked by the general public not to simply ask for input, but to put something on the table that the public can react to. We certainly aren't going out there with our minds made up. I think if you look at the earlier decisions that the agency has made relative to, let's take bull strategies as an instance, many changes were made at the commission meeting itself, based on the input from the general public, based on what staff heard from the public at these public meetings. But oftentimes we're limited in terms of the options we may have based on our rules or regulations or enforcement capabilities. So there is always opportunities, I believe, for flexibility and change to proposals, and I think we've demonstrated that, particularly, as I mentioned, when those decisions come to the commission. The commission, I believe, is now hearing that very strong comment from the public, that it does appear that maybe they're rubber stamping what the staff is proposing, and I think they're putting staff under considerable more scrutiny in terms of the opportunity to get public input and actually act on that public input very clearly so it's made known to the public.
Senator Corcoran?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran, yes. We have two other members that wish to make comment. We're under call of the Senate.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder if we could move forward. I'd like to recognize the other members and call for the question. I mean, a point by
if you want to cut off debate now, I mean, you know, that's fine.
Senator Corcoran, a point by Senate refutation of Representative Byer's commentary isn't really necessary. I think the members are fully capable of deciding whether Senator or Representative Byer's commentary was credible or not credible, and this is not a substantive committee. I share many of the concerns with you that we'd be accurate, but I'd like to move forward if that's possible.
Well, I still have some questions about the Pioneer increase and the disabled veterans increase, so when you get done with them, I'd like to go back to that if I could.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Representative Messerly briefly, and then Representative Jones briefly, and then any other member who wishes to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make comment that I will support this budget. I have some concerns, however. I find some comfort in the fact if we do put a sunset, I hope that will be an amendment that will come forth. I think this department has had a lot of discussion throughout this building in the last 6 months. They've got a huge job to do.
We provided a tremendous oversight to our oversight committee and many other ways that they will be reporting back on a quarterly basis. And the bottom line is that even with this fee increase, they still have a hole in their budget. And through surplus property or whatever we develop here in the next few days, we're not fixing all their problems now. The pressure is still on the department.
I'm sure another staff member with the commentary. Representative Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And very quickly, I had the issue of that Senator Corcoran had of seniors and the Pioneer parent discrepancy there. And I guess my question is very simple. Is there a commitment on the part of the agency to correct that problem, if that is a problem?
Mr. Chair and Representative Jensen, you're referring in terms of the problem you're describing?
Yes. That the senior fees are going down over 75 years here. Fees for pioneers are 65 and 50 years in the state are going up.
I think what I'd like to point out is under the pioneer license, we are eliminating the $2 charge and providing a permanent license or fee, and that would be for anybody coming on into the state.
As opposed to an annually renewable license. So you get one
license. For people 55 or older, you know, lived in the state for 50 years. And on the tag in the senior citizens fees, what we've looked at, and we've brought this before this body in the past, and it has not had the kind of support that it has, I believe, this year. Those original fees were established as a 50% break. In other words, when an health tag was $5 30-plus years ago, it was a 50% break, and the same for the senior citizen's license. We're simply implementing the 50% reduction here.
Okay, I'll move on with that point having been made. A issue in relationship to the unfortunate event that was revealed during the session here, and your reprimand or your action, the interesting thing that I did not hear included in what you considered was public perception. And I understand you may be under some constraints, and I don't want to get into what those constraints were. However, my question is, have your policies been rewritten so that in the future, if events like that take place, that you may be able to take more serious action?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, what I've employed by assigning a task force to take a look at this entire process is essentially peel apart all the pieces of the union around the control plan process and essentially develop policies, rules, and possibly statutes that would address anything that might show any additional or potential perception problem on the part of employees potentially gaining advantage over the general public. I've also, through Senate Bill 778, committed to an accountability process that will also outline a number of different policies that we're going to bring forward, as well as address new policies that get to the very question you're asking, I believe, and that is how do we address some of these perception issues, as well as those that are realities that need to be addressed over the long term, very similar to the ones that I believe Representative Mesley has asked us to look at over the next 18 months.
So I could follow just a second. What I would like to see in that is an employment policy that if situations, that in situations like this, it is grounds for termination. I know that when you put things into employment policy, and people are basically signing a contract when they come on, that you, what's an okay thing. Mr. Chair, comments. The other thing I would like to see the agency do in the interim, having heard the discussion I was pointing on the Cougar issue, is to take a more active management. I believe the tools are there for you to deal with these issues. I'd just like to see a little more active management of these issues, because I'm sure you don't want, nor do I want, to have an event take place out there someplace that we have to deal with. And I'm going to support this 2100, Mr. Chair, if we have a sunset as a provision on it. I think that that's a very worthwhile sort of thing, and I don't think it's a threat to the agency. It is, however, a reminder that they need to have to have heard the issues we've been listening to today.
Further comments? Senator Corcoran?
Oh, go for it.
Colleagues, we are in work session Senate Bill 2100. I think there was House Bill 2100. I think we're going to be considering a conceptual amendment for a censo in this bill. Mr. Rocco, how might that be expressed in our bill? Just the language, the conceptual language to add a sunset that would bring it to a closure prior to the next legislative session.
Mr. Chair, I believe the fee increase would take effect on January 1st, 2000, so sunset would apply to the appeal if the increase is as of January 1st, 2002, and then the next discussion and the legislature takes action.
Christine is nodding going on from so we need a conceptual amendment for House Bill 2100. Representative Jensen?
Chair, I move the conceptual amendment as stated by Mr. Rocco.
Is there any questions on the motion? Any further discussion of the motion? Seeing and hearing none, any objections? So ordered. We need a motion to move House Bill 2100 as conceptually amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee. And actually, the dash 5 amendments also need to be considered. So we need a motion to move the dash 5 amendments.
Yes, sir.
Representative?
I would move the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2100.
Any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. We need a motion to move House Bill 2100 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
President Jensen?
I would move House Bill 2100 to the Full Ways and Means Committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion to move House Bill 2100 with the dash fire, or as amended to the Full Ways and Means of the due pass recommendations, and probably somebody call the roll call, but I want to make the point for the record that without the addition of the census, I think that Calgary would not be looking at being able to move this forward, and that many of the votes are courtesy votes predicated on that. I also want to thank Representative Weston for helping with for sharing this meeting. I was running into the hallway.
We'll call the roll.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Mercury?
Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Senator Turner?
Aye.
Senator Sims?
Aye.
Senator Mercury?
No.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Chair Farrelly?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Members, we're already under call of defense, but we really want to move the House Bill 5023 that we're on the Fish and Wildlife Bridge, and it was predicated on moving House Bill 2100. Mr. Rockwell, can you make the briefest possible presentation of House Bill 5023?
Mr. Chair, earlier we had passed out and gone over the changes to that budget as we had discussed at an earlier meeting, I believe, and basically the total budget was described in the spreadsheet that I provided to the committee of approximately $14.1 million general fund, $3.7 million in lottery funds, $80.1 million other funds, $79.1 million federal funds, and $2.5 million of non-limited funds. And the details are in the spreadsheet that we've discussed here.
Colleagues, the details of the budget have been discussed. House Bill 2100 is integral to this funding of this House bill. We're sending this budget to Full Ways and Means of the Pass recommendation. However, there still is a serious shortfall in the director's budget for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Is there any discussion on House Bill 2053? We are at work session. Senator Smith?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. Mr. Greer, Representative Breyer was quoted as saying that you have an enormous amount of unused property. If you put up the sale, would you discuss that concept? Do you have any plans for anything for us? How enormous is it, and what are your plans?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, we currently have plans to do a region-by-region review of all of our surplus property. We do have a laundry list. It's a lot of very small pieces of property. Many have just been donated to the department. But we also have some land that we've been hanging on for many years that has been changed in terms of priority based on changes that we've seen in the agency over time. We intend to have that full review done by the end of the year and have some recommendations to the commission and report back to the oversight committee as to those properties that we believe we should let go and realize some sort of net revenue from them. What we don't know is what that might be and how fast we can move those properties, assuming we get that concurrence with the commission.
Just another question.
Question there, Senator Clinton.
There's been a proposal to eliminate Package 204, which provides the at-sea and dockside fishing services. What are you going to be unable to do in response to? I asked Representative Ponce the same question. What impact is that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Clinton, we'll, as we discussed yesterday, be able to do a limited amount of dockside and at-sea work with the fleet currently. We have approximately, I believe, $300,000 that we're committed to that. This will limit our ability to essentially get the data necessary to give stock assessments that currently we're relying on National Fisheries Service that's only coming forward on an every third year basis. So it's really critical that we get that information into the decision-making process that the Pacific Fishery Management Council, or I believe this will continue to keep pressure on us to have harvest be reduced because the stock assessments are very limited and the data collected.
Sure.
Question?
So do we run the risk, as Representative Thompson said, of damaging ourselves into the future by not adequately funding this package?
Mr. Chair and Senator Corcoran, I believe that's right. I think the risk is high not having information on some of these ground fish species that we can probably get enough adequate information to at least put that on the table with the National Fisheries Service that these stocks are either in good shape or not in good shape right now. We just don't have the information.
Other questions from the Chair? Sure, there are several budget notes.
Mr. Chair, the budget notes that I've just provided to me a repetition of just a copy of the memo provided on July 10th, so there's been no changes to the budget notes since that time.
Chris Vanessa, do you have a conceptual change to the budget notes?
Yes, I did. I gave you the letter, Mr. Chair, and it's in regards to the suggestion from Representative Simon. However, in that budget note, I would prefer to remove the sentence specifying the number of cougar and bear that would be studied. This is a study, but I think it's staff policy to include a number prior to the study.
Using the prerogative of the chair, what we will do is add the references to numbers so that the information goes for with the study of removal of cougars and bears, but not constrain the department by including any numbers that would specify how many should or would not be removed. Could we still trust the biological opinion? Rick, don't you share what comment you want to make?
The budget note pretty similar to legislation we addressed on top four that failed and even larger numbers. This is a significant issue, and my district also is a conflict on that, but I do not care about it. I do care about this issue and understand the concerns that we have. But this, in fact, in my perception, does. A conflict to the budget note of a bill that did fail on its merits on the floor.
So, Senator, I understand your concern. A budget note is advisory to the agency. It expresses an expectation. It does not bind the agency in any sense as a statute would.
but I believe that there's a significant enough concern about the crashing numbers of elk in the area that it should be addressed. And I understand that the director of the department has no objection to doing this kind of a study. So it isn't a bill, it's a budget.
My point is that I didn't see any, you know, financial resources dedicated to accomplish this. And I can't imagine this being, you know, I know this goal is down, and I think it's responsible that if we're going to do a job, we're going to give the resources.
Representing your point is well made and better because it's related to something, so I appreciate that. So I understand that the director is prepared to do the study with existing resources. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, the position that we've come forward with is that we really did need those funds, and I think we have put together the study. We've actually put together a couple of modified studies based on a budget note that we received this last biennium. We have not identified the funds where those are going to come from. We would probably have to cancel an existing research project to move into a new one. So it won't be easy for the agency to take it on, is what I'm trying to say. Could come back to the e-board and request funds at that time once we had the specifics of this particular study nailed down with the specifics that are listed here in the budget note suggestion. So that might be a course of action to take.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Further questions? Hearing and seeing none, we are in work session. Need a motion to move House Bill 5023 to the floor with a recast recommendation. Co-Chairman Tim makes the motion to move House Bill 5023. That would be with Representative Simmons' modified budget note that takes the numbers out. So everybody understand the motion? And with the budget notes that have been proposed for inclusion by our legislative system. Any questions on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, we will call the roll.
Representative Weston?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Messerly?
Aye.
Representative King?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Senator Returno?
Aye.
Senator Kim?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Senator Corson?
No.
Chair Ferrelli?
Aye.
Motion passed.
The chair will carry the budget for the full weight in the room, and we need a carrier for the House side. We'll give Representative Weston the honor of carrying the bill to the House side with the acknowledgement that it was to be proposed for the Senate budget note that makes that correct. And, yeah, I see Representative Lewis is here. Trying to volunteer, but I wouldn't hear of it. Yeah, I'm going to have a brief. After we get our Senate side carrier, the chair will carry for the Senate side, and carriers for 2100 will be the chair for the full ways and means. Which of the Democrats would like to say that?
Neither one, Mr. Chair.
Let's see, the Democrats argued for the agency and voted against this bill, argued for the agency and voted against the...
We're not relevant.
We're not relevant now. If you and the governor, you go for it.
Right, see, so the irrelevancy in both the RDS vote, now, thank you very much for your cooperation, gentlemen. We will have...
I just want to make the...
Well, we have to have a carry.
Read
carry only will carry on the floor, and we need a health carrier for 2100. Jensen will carry on that. We'll close the public session and work session on House Bill 5023 and 2100, and the co-chairs have the floor, and they can argue about the AP question.
I just want to make the AP question. I am Abbott Hunter. I do happen to have a Pioneer license. I think I better go get one. I'm not sure that's right. But the point is that the fish and wildlife, my hunting is better for us right now than all my life. And I can tell you also, if you talk about administrative cuts, we've had dramatic administrative cuts with the Canary and closing offices and what and loss of key biologists in the case in regards to some endangered species, which is going to reach up and fight us if we don't make sure we do that. I think this is an important budget. I think I agree with the chair. I think you have a real challenge to address the stock in the situations that have developed because most of those weren't held in too high a scheme before then. But good luck, and I think it's a good budget. And let's just get some help.
Before I turn to the co-chair of Ways and Means, I'll just address to your relevancy comments. My colleagues from the Senate may feel irrelevant to the process, but they have not been irrelevant to this committee, nor to the chair. We've been responsive to your concerns. We've modified positions and legislation based on the discussions that we've had here. We've been invited into every one of the processes, and we've tried to give you the same considerations and courtesy as we have every other member of the committee. If you feel irrelevant in this process, I would suggest that that's something internal and not something that comes from the committee. With that, I will turn it over to you.
Something internal? The internal budget field.
Co-Chair Kearns and I wanted to thank everybody, and we did last week. For those of you who came to the boat, guys, which was a lot of fun, but some of you didn't come, and we just have a little small certificate, and the certificate says, in gratitude for your countless hours and those that work as a member of the 1999 Joint Ways and Means Committee, your dedication is greatly appreciated by your fellow legislators and the citizens of Detroit. And Senator Parson, welcome.
Thank you, and Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and I hope that Senator Sims will give us cover for showing up 15 minutes late after a call.
Oh,